There have always been legends about people willing to give up their immortal soul to gain riches in life. I mean, there was even a Simpsons episode about it, for goodness sakes. But how true are these stories? Today we examine a handful of tales from the last 100 years, some of which will even make a few skeptics question if this phenomenon is real.
Missing, hidden, the podcast about bad things.
Welcome, welcome, welcome into the greatest podcast on bad things ever, Killing, Missing, Hidden, but with a plus. That's right, we got another special supporter-only episode just for the beautiful people in the world like you. And as, of course, you know, this is your old buddy Brad. Today I thought we'd go in a spookier direction with our episode and investigate some infamous deals, particularly in the music and entertainment industry. Deals with the devil. Now, naturally, there isn't some archive we can go to where we can pull up a properly signed and notarized contract with demonic forces. So we're really forced to rely on folktales, industry rumors, and good old internet claims, right? But these are the best kinds of stories, really. They get to live in the fog between, you know, history and fairy tale, truth and lies, allowing us to believe what we want and feel justified in doing so. So sit back, get comfy, as we dig into some reports of people who would do anything for success. Now, every music fan on Earth knows where we're starting this episode, right? We're going to head on down to Highway 61 and 49, where they meet in Clarksdale, Mississippi, right around midnight. Or maybe we ought to go over to the crossroads by Dockery Plantation in Dockery, Mississippi. Or mayhaps we should head on over to a graveyard in Beauregard, Mississippi, late at night. Heck yes, 10 people in the Delta region, you're going to get 10 different answers. But somewhere in Mississippi, during the witching hour, in the late 1920s, early 1930s, a young man with a guitar and a dream sat down on the ground and prayed for help. He wanted to be a big-time blues musician. He wanted out of the life of poverty he saw as his destiny. And shortly after this prayer, Robert Johnson went missing for a spell. Now, Johnson was nothing more than a boy on a plantation for most of his short life, but he yearned for something bigger. Blues was in his soul, and he had to let it out. So when he was able to get his hands on a guitar, he began pecking away at that threadbare instrument. He practiced as much as he could, but as one of his contemporaries, Son House, said, "The boy was decent at harmonica, but just awful on the guitar. He didn't have any natural talent for the instrument." Now Robert, you know, came from a God-fearing family. He had two close relatives who served as ministers, and old Robert was baptized before he could walk, according to some folk. In fact, he was often referred to as Brother Robert, and as he was by his formal name. Typically, the biggest trouble he would get into would be sneaking off to spend the night at one of the local, or not so local on some occasion, blues clubs that littered the Delta region. In the early years, he'd just be listening. But as he got older and more experienced with his guitar, he'd want to give a try on stage. Never played much of anything too remarkable. The boy did all right. Well, all right wasn't good enough for Robert. And that's why he dropped down on his knees and made this impassioned plea to the Lord one night. But the answer he got, it wasn't what he was expecting. It was something darker, different. As the young man sat on his knees in that Mississippi mud, a large black man came shuffling down the path. Robert was instantly magnetized by the man, unable to look away. But he was scared. This man looked like the embodiment of trouble. And trouble was not something Robert was keen to find out about. Now, we don't know what words were said or what promises, if any, were made. All we do know is that the large man picked up Robert's guitar, tuned it for a few minutes, then played a few blues songs to absolute perfection. My Robert was so impressed I didn't know whether to clap or stay silent. There was a touch of menace about this figure, so silence won the day, we believe. Now, no one knows exactly what happened after that instrument fell silent. Many rumors claim deals were made. Regardless, the next time any person saw Robert on this realm again, it was up in Robertsonville, Mississippi, not far from Memphis, and he was a different man. Robert was a legitimate blues guitarist. Folks claimed he did things with that instrument that had never been done before. His technique was flawless, and he held a mastery over the blues. Soon he was being allowed to play anywhere and with anyone. He spent most of his 30s bouncing around from club to club, usually in parts of the world that counted Memphis as the biggest, closest city. But he'd also be dragged off to Chicago, New York, over to Kentucky and Indiana, even down to Texas by other blues musicians who wanted to share his unique sound. One more people to hear what Robert was all about. Now, Robert kind of became infamous for two things while on these road trips. He never, ever went by his given name. Historians have confirmed he used at least 8 different surnames. And he never spent the night in a hotel, usually because he managed to secure free lodging from a pretty face in the audience at one of his shows. Offstage, Robert was a bit of a shy, soft-spoken man. He came across as a little bit smaller than a statue. His musician friends claimed that he had 3 weaknesses: women, whiskey, and the road. Now, those first two don't really require much of an explanation, do they? But Robert's relationship with the road was an odd one. He'd never felt comfortable staying in place for too long. He wasn't going to let grass grow under his feet, and he was happy to walk from city to town and town to city playing for tips on street corners when his funds ran low. It was almost as if... Well, it was almost as if he thought he may die if he ever stopped moving. He would disappear on his friends without saying a word to them, only to return 2 or 3 weeks later as if nothing happened. Now, sadly for the world of music and for history, Robert's vagabond lifestyle meant he didn't spend much time in the recording studio. In fact, only twice did he set out to make any sort of recordings. The first was in San Antonio in November of 1936. Then he got drug in there again in Dallas in June of 1937. He made a total of 59 recordings, usually 2 of each song, but 3 of one. And of those 59 recordings, only 42 have ever been discovered. Others are considered just lost to history. Now, during his lifetime, several of his singles were released in dime stores. But it wouldn't really be until around 1961 that a true album of his work was ever put together and published. One thing that was odd, and no one can deny this, he named several of his songs after the devil, or at least songs that would draw one's mind in that direction. We're talking songs named Preaching Blues, Up Jump the Devil, If I Had Possession Over Judgment Day, Hellhound on My Trail, and the Devil Blues. Oh, and the Crossroad Blues. Forgot that one. You know, nothing in and of themselves that was suspicious, but in the context of this tale, I'd be a bit remiss if I didn't note this oddity. I think we all know what happened to Robert, so I won't belabor the point. He left our world on August 16th, 1938, at the tender age of 27, being the first initiate of that elite, if unwanted, 27 club. He was over in Greenwood, Mississippi, when he passed. Interestingly, though, there wasn't much of a stir about his death. Local authorities and newspapers stayed silent about the affair. Even his official state-issued death certificate says next to nothing, with no cause of death listed. Now, that doesn't really mean anything. Everybody knew what happened to Robert. Robert got to flirting with the wrong girl, and her boyfriend didn't take too kindly to it. So he brought a bottle of whiskey for her to give to Robert as a gift. He took it happily and was about to enjoy its contents when Sonny Boy Williams came up and knocked that bottle out of his hand. You just don't drink from a bottle you didn't open. Everybody knew that, but Robert didn't care. He wanted that whiskey. In fact, he bowed up on Williamson and said, "Don't you never knock a bottle out of my hand again, boy." Soon after, Robert was offered another bottle of whiskey, of course, opened for him, and he drank greedily from it. He continued his advances on all the pretty young things in the area, but soon it was time to go on home. And as he made his way to wherever he was staying that night, his stomach started feeling like it was infested with wasps. In fact, he couldn't even make it back to his bed without help. When he made it to bed and was laid out, he laid there in agony and never got out of it. He spent the next 3 days howling in pain, throwing up and bleeding from the mouth. So what happened to this poor man? He was poisoned. Hence the warning never to drink from a bottle that wasn't opened by you. In fact, this was a pretty common way to poison folks down in the rural South at the time. See, what you do now is you take some mothballs and drop it down in the alcohol. The mothballs will dissolve and leave the liquor full of naphthalene. And while naphthalene generally isn't deadly poison, it can cause a whole mess of problems for folks who drink it. But if you've got digestive issues, it can push you over the edge. And, well, Johnson had a powerful ulcer, along with some other issues of his lower digestive tract, we'll say. It's believed that poison whiskey caused some hemorrhaging. And complicating matters, many folks believe Robert had a pretty serious case of syphilis. Now, another interesting bit to close off his tale. No one knows what happens to Robert's remains. Never had a proper funeral. No one knows where his corpse disappeared off to. However, if you want to visit his gravesite and pay respect, you've got a handful to pick from. He has a headstone in Morgan City, Quito, and Greenwood, Mississippi. All claim to be Robert's legitimate grave, of course, but researchers can't confirm any of them as being the real deal. So are we to assume that Robert's body was maybe claimed by an unnamed large black man who taught Robert how to play the blues? Perhaps. Or perhaps Robert was just tossed into a pauper's grave as a young black man back in the rural South in the 1930s. Next up, we got one that's probably going to be a surprise to some folks, because this is a fellow that's generally considered one of the good guys of rock and roll. Bob Dylan. Also believed to be in league with the devil himself. All thanks to a notorious 2004 60 Minutes interview. Now, for those of you from outside the U.S., 60 Minutes is a pretty reputable news program that's been on the air for decades. Dylan was being interviewed by Ed Bradley, and he was asked why he continues to tour and play live shows into his golden years. Dylan's response was odd, to say the least. He said he made a deal with Destiny to get to where he is now, and he has to continue to uphold his end of the bargain. When Bradley jokingly asked who he made his deal with, Dylan said it was with, quote, "the chief commander of this earth and in the world we can't see." Later in the interview, Dylan claims he doesn't know how he wrote all the songs from his younger days, saying they just magically appeared. And he doesn't even like to look at him anymore. He continues by stating songs like "Those Take Magic to Write" and stresses that he's not talking about, quote, "Siegfried and Roy kind of magic." Dylan goes on stating the magic requires penetrating, and he just can't do it anymore. He can claim he can do other things, but he can't write music. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on YouTube. It's not hidden. And it's a creepy interview. It really leads one down the road to believe that Dylan may have done something he regrets early in his career. And I want to stress that this does not appear that Dylan's joking around or having fun. He looks legitimately uncomfortable talking about this. I mean, it left me with the impression that he's trying to answer questions that he can't speak freely about. There's a controversial story that may explain how the man known for providing the soundtrack to the civil rights movement would be attached to such an evil tale. Dylan dabbled in rock and roll during high school and shortly thereafter, but he became a fan of folk music while attending the University of Minnesota. Now, during this time, he fell in love with the music of Woody Guthrie, considering Guthrie to be his idol. And if you don't know, Guthrie was a huge folk music musician. In 1960, Dylan dropped out of college to go visit Guthrie, who was being hospitalized in a psychiatric facility in New York. Dylan himself said his relationship with Guthrie caused a revolution on how Dylan's musical career would develop. Now, what we got to say here is there's reports, and they are heavily disputed by Guthrie's family. But there are lots of reports that Guthrie kind of inadvertently became involved with some occult dealings in the 1950s. He was claimed to have become friends with L. Ron Hubbard. Yeah, the guy of Scientology fame. And even got involved in the early days with the Church of Scientology. He was almost like a guinea pig, if you believe the rumors, when it came to their the testing and whatnot that they do on folks to try to improve their mental health over at the Church of Scientology. But in Guthrie's case, they helped escalate an underlying psychiatric problem. See, Guthrie had Huntington's disease, which is a nasty thing. I'll let y'all read up about it because this ain't a medical podcast, but it's noteworthy that Dylan meets with this fella in 1960, and then Dylan would release his first album 2 years later in 1962. Guthrie was rendered mute by his disease in 1965 and died shortly thereafter in 1967. So what straws are we grasping at to this story? Well, Dylan, by his own words, made a deal with destiny early in his career. And if Dylan idolized a man who is alleged to have run in occult circles, and then Dylan releases his first album shortly after meeting his idol, was this when Dylan learned how to make a deal with the devil? Now, personally, I don't know if there's enough here to say that Guthrie corrupted Dylan. But the timing of the rumors are curious. There's also two more events that took place later in Dylan's life that I think could support these allegations. First, in the 1970s, he became a pretty devout born-again Christian. Second, in July of 2021, Dylan sold the rights to all of his songs to Sony. Every single one. He don't own them anymore. All these songs that gave him all his fame and fortune, all these songs that were allegedly written by some magical force, they're no longer in his legal possession. Now, can we view this as an attempt by Dylan to cancel the deal? Part of an effort to strive for redemption like Faust in the classic Germanic legend? Or am I reading too much into what may be nothing more than some wise estate planning? Now, Johnson and Dylan are the only two cases we're going real deep on because this is just a really dang difficult topic to research. You know, it's all rumors and speculation. Johnson's legacy is completely wrapped up in the Crossroads story, so his wasn't a pain, and Dylan basically told his story on 60 Minutes. Some of his actions, you know, that we found connect to the story, in my opinion. But now we're going after some other celebrity stories that are based 100% on rumors and internet chatter that seemed to have something there, but, you know, again, it's just going to live in that vague mist between truth and fiction. You know, modern day, most folks adamantly claim that Jay-Z and Beyonce are part of the Illuminati or some sort of nefarious group, right? Most common stories I've seen involve Jay-Z wanting to do anything to make it in the music business. You know, he had a rough life growing up, and he made it against arguably all the odds. And then he slowly became bigger than music and involved in clothing, alcohol, technology, sports, media, clubs, cigars, cannabis, and even education ventures. By all accounts, he's been a success at everything he does. The theories surrounding Jay-Z seem to rely a lot on the lyrics to the song "The Evils" when he asks God to save him from secret societies who want his mind, body, and soul, and eventually the lyrics indicate that he gave them what they wanted. Towards the end of the song, the lyrics also claim he no longer prays to God and isn't looking for forgiveness. Now, from one of his more popular songs that even white folks have heard of, he collaborated with Alicia Keys in that Empire State of Mind song. If you'll remember, there's a lyric in there that says, "Jesus can't save you, life starts where the church ends." He's also allegedly learned of Aleister Crowley, a famous occultist, as evidenced by some of the clothing he's worn. And he's been called out by fellow rappers Nas, 50 Cent, and Kanye West for aligning himself with the puppet masters of this world. He recently started referring to himself as Hav, or Jehovah, a play on the biblical name of God, Jehovah. He's currently in the process of making a movie about the Bible called The Book of Clarence, which is supposed to offer an alternative view on how life really was when Jesus walked the earth. And its purpose is to teach folks that the truth comes from inside of you, not necessarily from the Bible. As I understand it, obviously the movie's not out, so I'm going off of what others have reported. Now, at a minimum, I think you can make an argument, you know, he isn't down with Jesus or church, and that's fine. And, you know, Beyonce carries these same rumors, but I get the vibe she's attached to Jay-Z's choices more than anything. However, there are those who think that her fierceness makes her even more dangerous than Jay-Z. She's considered untethered compared to Jay-Z. I couldn't find much that connected Beyonce with the lifestyle outside of her relationship with her husband. But I did find this interview, and sadly, it was, you know, a repost of a repost of a repost sort of deal. And this woman claims to be a witch and insisted that Beyonce, too, was a witch. And she explained, you know, who Beyonce worshipped and all this mess, and claimed adamantly that Beyonce had an altar in her bedroom. And every night she stayed at home, she would do a ritual where she gave her soul over to whatever entity that altar was for. There's also lots of strange videos of Beyonce floating around where, you know, at concerts and events, she seems to be possessed or show signs of something inhuman in her in a classic cinema way. You know, she's even claimed in interviews that Sasha Fierce is her alter ego, who she goes to when she's let loose on stage. And this is one of those stories where, you know, individually, none of this really bothers me, but lumped together, you know, especially when understanding who her husband is, it kind of makes you think a little bit. Next up, why don't we do famous, infamous, I don't know how to properly describe her, comedian Roseanne Barr. Yeah. In fact, she's admitted to such in writing. Seriously. One of her books, Roseanne Arkey, she says that at the tender age of 12, she knew she wanted fame more than anything else in this world. And so she did her own version of a ceremony where she promised her soul to the big evil in exchange for fame. And during an appearance on The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, she confirmed this to be true. Now, she tries to play it off as a joke, but it's interesting what she's wearing. It's a very painfully obvious black and red outfit, as if it was purposefully selected to discuss this topic. And, you know, she even claims while talking to Craig Ferguson that she had to renegotiate her deal later in life. In fact, she has blamed her downfall on the devil. Perhaps she had a bit of a lover's spat with the Prince of Darkness. I don't know. But if you look into stories and reports of her, she evokes his name a lot in interviews and blames a lot of the problems in her life on him. So while she's joking during this interview with Craig Ferguson, it kind of leaves one with the impression that her jokes may have been made to cover the truth, possibly. Another one that is pretty well buried involves Angelina Jolie. There apparently was a video that was leaked onto YouTube many years ago, something like 10 years ago. Now, the video's gone. It's been scrubbed from the internet. But as you know, nothing ever truly disappears on the internet. And some TikTokers have found portions of this video. And the video is Angelina Jolie sitting in what appears to be kind of a small apartment living room, talking with two friends. And it appears from the way it's being shot that she's being secretly recorded. She is, during this conversation with, again, what I'm presuming to be two friends, she's very, very careful with her word choices. And so if you were to write a transcript of what's being talked about, you could easily read it and say, well, there's no explicit mention of the devil or anything like that. But it's hard not to make some reasonable inferences that she's discussing something pretty bad. She plainly states about having to be tied down naked during some event. And she said, you know, you don't really have a choice but to be tied down because you will try to fight back and go mad. There are indications that she was being used sexually. And a comment from one of her friends suggests this is being done in the middle of an orgy. She claims she was tattooed during this ritual and states that for having completed it, she's been given possession of compromising pictures of very powerful people. Now, the rumors regarding the original full video tell a much darker story. Apparently showing this event as a ritual that she participated in voluntarily that included things like animal sacrifices, Jolie being bathed in the animal's blood, powerful people clearly being present on the video, and lots of demonic imagery and icons around the room. Jolie allegedly mentions that all of these ceremonies are recorded so it can be used against individuals who become troublemakers. And even her having shown the video to her friends was an apparent no-no. In fact, discussing the event apparently is a huge no-no. Her participation is said to have occurred in 1991. and was repeated on at least one more occasion, but the way it's described, it sounds like it occurred multiple times. That seems to be the bulk of the story. Lots of people suspect this was an Illuminati ritual. Lots of folks, of course, link the Illuminati with the devil. I don't have an opinion on that. But it's very strange. It's very, very strange if you hunt down the video on TikTok. So there you go. Just a nice handful of stories about folks trading their souls for earthly riches. I was actually kind of surprised how many of these had some nugget of potential truth at the core of the story. I thought this would be something I look into, and we just see all these rumors and innuendo and nothing serious, but it was a little surprising. You know, to me, Robert Johnson's story doesn't really have this kernel of truth at the core, but it's just so ingrained in our pop culture, you know, his legend, that even though I give not a direct idea of what this episode's about from the name, even though I've totally left out any description from this video, I bet y'all knew what this was about when you clicked on it. And that's all because of our friend Bobby there. Now, the Dylan story did come out of left field, or it did for me, because he's viewed as such a positive influence in the world. You know, he seems to admit it, though, in this interview. And, you know, I can see where these may be efforts to undo the deal that we've talked about. And, you know, the classic folklore seems to suggest this is possible. A couple stories, my favorite being, a holy man of some sort, somewhere around the northern region of Europe, suffered a sailing mishap and ended up being stuck on what was basically an ice drift. And he was soaked to the core, freezing to death. And so he chose to pray to the devil for help and made a deal that if the devil would get him back to shore, he would give up his soul. Well, suddenly a seal appears and gives this man a ride all the way from this little ice island to shore. Almost. See, before they could reach dry land, this holy man smashed the seal in the head with a hammer, killing it, forcing the man to swim and walk the last, 10 meters or so. Thus, allowing the devil not to complete his side of the bargain. There's another story somewhere in Europe about a man who had to build a bridge in an impossibly short amount of time, so he asked for some dark assistance in exchange for the life and soul of the first living creature to cross the bridge. The bridge was constructed in miraculous time, and the town wanted to celebrate the grand opening. So the builder said, okay, let's use the bridge. And at the head of this little parade, he sent a dog. And before anyone could make it across, the dog did and dropped dead. And, you know, again, another way to cheat the devil out of his own deal. So if Dylan really did make a deal with the devil, is him, you know, selling the ownership rights, sell his music, a way to get out of it? If this is the least bit true, I hope so for his sake. I don't have much to add about the Jay-Z and Beyonce story. There are some people who argue that most folks refuse to accept that a poor black kid from the projects who was a dealer and didn't finish high school could ever become so successful on its own. So this demonic tale has been attached to him to make this story easier to digest. But, you know, that being said, I think there's enough circumstantial evidence that the story can stand on its own four legs. Again, I'm not saying anyone in this episode is a lapdog of evil. I'm just sharing what I've read and, you know, for the purpose of this episode, accepting it at face value. And, you know, there's not really much indication on Beyoncé's side of her being involved in any of this before her relationship with Jay-Z. So she kind of is guilty by association in a way. Of all the folks we talked about, though, boy, Roseanne Barr got the shortest stick of the deal, right? I mean, she made her name as a comedian, then she had that sitcom, and then nothing. Maybe that's when she attempted to renegotiate her deal, as she claimed. I don't know, but I guess you shouldn't sell your soul before you can drive. I'm sure the devil doesn't worry about whether a contract with a minor is legally enforceable, you know? He seems like a prick in that way. And I have to say, of all these stories, Angelina Jolie one is the one that gave me the most willies. I didn't like that one. I didn't like watching that video. Again, we don't get the full video. We only get bits and pieces of it. But I don't know, man. It struck me in some way. It reeks of someone, as she's sitting there talking to her friends, like, this was no big deal to her. This is just, she was doing what she had to do to get where she wanted to go. And it's worked for her, if it's true. So kudos. I don't know. There isn't really a Hallmark card for this sort of event, so I don't know what to say. You know, as far as my opinion overall, and I'm going to go, I don't know. Y'all are going to think more or less of me after this. I don't know which. I am willing to buy into the idea that you can go into league with evil. You guys know I'm a Christian. You know, I did spend a lot of my life studying other religions and faiths before making this decision. So because of this, I seem to have a very different view of how life works than most of the folks in my congregation. You know, for example, faith is a huge deal to me. And I think it's kind of the key to anything we try to do when we expect help from outside of ourselves. And, you know, the Bible defines faith as the assured expectation of things not yet delivered. Or at least that's Hebrews 11:1 as, you know, translated crudely by Brad. And I don't know why this concept would be limited to just Christianity. I mean, there's no question the Bible mentions other gods, so why couldn't a worshiper of Baal rely on his or her faith in that god? You know, when a practitioner of Wicca casts a spell, is that not an expression of faith? And is the spell going to work if you doubt that it will? And to me, that's why I think a lot of people think prayers don't work. You know, you don't go into it hoping God will answer you. You go into it absolutely believing God is there to help you out. And, you know, in the Bible, not to get preachy, you know, but Jesus said you only need faith the size of a mustard seed. You know, for New Agers who believe in the power of manifestation, don't you need to be in the mindset that you're 100% getting what you are manifesting? You're not hoping for it, you're knowing it, which is faith as it's defined in my idea. So if we can accept this idea, and if we can only accept this idea in a Christian sense, why would faith in darkness be any different? And, you know, in an argument that would probably get me kicked out of my congregation, I would dare say that all the darkness and cruelty in these rituals needed to appease, you know, such great evil requires a massive display of faith and assurance. And thus is probably a successful way of getting what one wants if it's a worldly desire. I mean, from Angelina Jolie's story, I read in between the lines that she's bound down, she's having blood poured all over her. She's, I don't know if she's, you know, having sex with lots of different people all for the purpose of achieving fame. Why go through all that if you didn't believe that it would work? So that's the tangent I'm going off on. I hope I made the point I was trying to make, and I hope no one judges me too much on here. I know I'm an odd slice of cheese in my worldview. You know, I want to mention, you'll notice there's no sources that I've included with this episode. That's mainly because it's lots of bits and pieces from a variety of places that I've put together. The source list would be massive, and I don't think anyone cares that much. I also want this episode to be viewed more as one that's designed to entertain than inform. You know, my official stance is I'm not saying any of these stories are true. This is just what I found on the internet. That's the lawyer in me talking, by the way. It's not slanderous this way. Well, not as slanderous. It gives me a defense should, you know, Roseanne Barr actually happen to be a listener. So, all right, I'm feeling like I'm prone to ramble, like a verbal Rolling Stone with no direction home. Another Dylan song that could support the crossword claims. All right, enough, palate cleanser time. We got to go musically on this one, don't we? It would just fit. So here you go. How do you fix a broken brass instrument? How do you fix a broken brass instrument? With a tuba glue. Ha! Tuba glue. You get it? Tuba? Yeah. It could probably work on some woodwinds too, like a saxophone or whatnot. We don't need to analyze a joke. It is what it is. Okay. I know you're all just hysterically laughing from that, but let's settle down for a bit so we can discuss the news in Brad's world. If you listen to, you know, the episode that came out on the regular feed, you've heard that my doctors have kind of insisted I step away from podcasting a bit. You know, it is a lot of work. It takes up a lot of time, researching, recording, editing, publishing, advertising, all that. It is a big chunk of, you know, my otherwise wakeful and potentially useful hours, but it's something I enjoy doing. Typically, the problem is right now, my doctors think I really need to be spending that time focusing on my mental health, which is a bummer, but my mental health probably should take priority over a podcast. So kind of here's the deal that I want for y'all, my KMH Plus subscribers. Go cancel your subscription right now. I'm going to release one more KMH Plus episode if I can, but I can't promise that. Further, I don't want anybody to be charged for the month of November and get nothing out of it. My understanding is when you cancel, you should have access to these episodes until your next, what would have been your next billing date. So hopefully you can enjoy this episode and what I have planned for the final episode, if I can make it happen without, you know, risking any of your money. I'm not interested to make money off of y'all. I just need it to keep the podcast going. So November 1st is when we're going to go dark. I'm keeping everything up, you know, like I said in the regular episode. So it's not suddenly going to disappear. You'll still be able to go back and re-listen all that. It's just 2003 has been a quite bad year for my mental health. September was probably the worst month of it. And just as I thought I was getting out of it, I kind of blew a mental tire. So I hope y'all understand why I'm having to do this. I really don't want to give up on it. I've spent, you know, almost 4 years at this building it, and I love it. So I'm hoping this is a temporary goodbye. But you know, I said all that in the regular feed. I want y'all to know that each and every one of you that's listening to this really deserve a special thank you from me. Your support has been massively encouraging. You know, starting a podcast is scary because you feel like an imposter. Why do strangers care about what I have to say? But, you know, I can't really describe what a confidence boost it is to have people say, no, we do want to hear what you want to say, and in fact, we'll pay extra to get more from you. And, you know, obviously, I had no intention of becoming rich. I just wanted the podcast to support itself and finance little projects that could help it grow. And the money y'all gave really did do that. And so from the bottom of my heart, you know, that y'all are just so generous and so supportive. I really appreciate it. You're good people. I'm going to keep the social media accounts open, though they'll, you know, come November, there'll be much less activity on there. If I'm in position to come back, I will certainly announce it, and it will be on Instagram first because I have the most followers there. I hope in our final episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, or at least the final one for the year, maybe I'll have some other avenues where you can keep track of me. You know, I truly, truly hate doing this. I appreciate y'all's understanding. Again, the goal is one more KMH Plus episode before the end of October. If you have any demands as to what it should be, let me know. I've got an idea sketched out, but if there's something y'all really want to hear, of course, I'll do it for y'all. And until next time, please just keep being the awesome people you've always been. And know that I really do appreciate and love all y'all. Right out.
You survived another episode of Killing, Missing, Hidden, the podcast about bad things. Join us next time for another true and thrilling story.